Welcome, everyone, to episode 346 of the NBA podcast. We are only a few days away from the start of the seeding games. We hope you've been enjoying the scrimmages over the past few days. Today, we are going to go through the top 20 players to watch in the seeding games and the restart throughout the rest of the season. Before we get to that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is a guy who is already measuring out his tattoo location, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
You wish.
So we are recording this on Friday, July 24th. Mort is going to be gone for a couple of days. We wanted to knock this out ahead of time. So full disclosure, if any of these guys get hurt between now and the time this podcast comes out, and we won't know about it. So that is the order that we are choosing is as of July 24th. Knock on wood, everyone will stay healthy, both in terms of injuries and COVID, and we won't have to worry about anything. But if the placement seems off for whatever reason, or if you hear a player on here who has since gotten knocked out for one reason or another, that is why.
Nice. Good. That was great prefacing. I like that.
Yeah. So we're usually, like, in the content creation business, we usually go back to front, 20 to 1. But in this particular instance, I feel like the top few players are so obvious that we should just actually go 1 through 20, because that's it gets progressively harder the further down you go.
Okay.
So let's start number 1. I think we probably both agree it's the guy who we named pretty clearly as the MVP, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Antetokounmpo, yeah.
Antetokounmpo, that is correct. Number 2 for me is LeBron James.
Oh my God, we're going to run through this podcast in 10 minutes. Okay. Yeah, LeBron, number 2, agreed.
Number 3 is Ben Simmons, because he just hit a 3-pointer against the Grizzlies. In a scrimmage, which changes everything. No, Ben Simmons will be a little further down, but he did just hit a 3-pointer.
Oh my God, you are, like, you're actually having an erection right now.
No, I'm just, I told you, you got to get ready for the tat, man.
Okay, sure.
I mean, we don't need to defend Giannis or LeBron 1 and 2. I think that's pretty easy. For me, number 3 is Kawhi Leonard. I mean, if what he did in the playoffs last year wasn't indication enough, I mean, he's having a career regular season this year with the Clippers. The two-way play is what I think separates him from the next few guys on this list, or at least two of the next few guys on this list for me.
Right.
Just the absurd defensive ability. And, I mean, his development as a playmaker this year, you know, going into the year, that was one of the big concerns about the Clippers is, do they have the passers? Do they have the playmakers? You know, Kawhi, who had never averaged more than 3.5 assists per game prior to the season, averaging 5 assists per game this year. So for me, you know, James Harden, Luka Doncic, you'll see those guys soon enough on my list. But I think Kawhi being so dominant on both ends of the floor gave him the bump beyond those two.
I have a question about Kawhi.
Okay.
Is he going to be, if he isn't already, the best player of all time with the worst stats, if you catch my drift on that? Like, is he the best player with, like, the most minuscule raw stats in NBA history? Because when you look at, like, it, like, he hasn't even cracked 10,000 points. He hasn't cracked 4,000 rebounds. He hasn't cracked 1,500 assists. Like, his total stats, like, aren't really going to be that significant when he wraps it up, because at this point he's already 29. So even if he plays like 6 or 7 more years, you know, at best he's probably going to end up with something along the lines of 15,000-16,000 points. But he's obviously significantly better than that.
Right. Like, he'll be a Hall of Famer with a bullet, despite, you know, averaging fewer than Let's see what he did over his first four seasons. 12 points per game over his first 4 years. Yeah, I think it's pretty fair to say that, if nothing else, his career statistics will not reflect his peak, unlike a guy like LeBron, who hit the ground running right away, or KD or Kobe, who like took, you know, one or two seasons maybe for them to ramp up to the 20-plus point per game threshold.
Right.
Whereas Kawhi, he didn't do it till his fifth season. Jimmy Butler's going to also be in that same mold.
Yeah.
Where his career stats will not reflect how good he was at his peak, I think.
Chris Middleton, too.
Yeah, that's a good one. But yeah, I mean, you know, you're going to... I do wonder if the perception, you know, like 40 years down the line, and you look at Kawhi's stats, you're like, how is that guy a Hall of Famer? And then we're like, watch the 2019 playoffs. Watch the 2014 finals.
Yeah, at that point, you and I are going to be sitting there like in rocking chairs with gray beard, right. Like beard guts hanging out, and just, yep. Oh, youngin, you should have known. Should have known. Yeah. Yeah. That's the problem with the youth today.
Assuming we haven't all been wiped out by a nuclear war at that point. Yeah, yeah, that is, yeah, yeah. That is definitely my plan for 2060. But any beef with Kawhi at number three on your end?
No, okay. Nope, not one whatsoever. I love Kawhi.
Okay, good. So four for me was between James Harden, Anthony Davis, and Luka Doncic.
Yeah.
Those three guys, I think, are 4, 5, 6 in some order. And there is not a huge line of separation between them and that next tier, but I think, you know, I think there's a tier with Giannis, LeBron, Kawhi on their own tier, and then Harden, Davis, Doncic also on their own tier, ahead of anyone else. So for me, I ended up going Harden at 4. I think you can really make an argument for any of the three, but I mean,
yeah,
you know, you can hate the way Harden plays basketball. You can hate his foul baiting. You can hate his flopping. You can hate, you know, you could say he's cheapening the game, but it works. It's effective. He's led the league in scoring for 3 straight years for a reason. I know, definitely not the defender that Anthony Davis is by any stretch of the imagination. So that is not a point in his books, but I think what he brings offensively, the way he can create shots off the dribble for himself in particular, that step back three is just absolutely lethal and almost unguardable. So I'm willing to overlook the defensive deficiencies given how potent he is on offense.
So the opposite question, will James Harden's raw stats appear better than what he actually was as a basketball player?
Ooh, that is a good question. I guess...
At least compare directly to Kawhi.
Yeah. Like, because you would pick Kawhi over Harden, but Harden's stats right now are going to look better.
Yeah. Yeah, I would pick Kawhi over Harden like every day of the week.
Yeah. I was going to say maybe those first couple seasons in OKC helped bring that down a little bit, but it looks like these past... Really, since he got to Houston, but these past few seasons in particular have really negated the effect of him coming off the bench in OKC and not averaging a ton of points.
Yeah, he scored almost 18,000 points in the 8 seasons he spent with the Rockets.
Yeah, God, that's wild. Yeah. I mean, like, Harden, and we'll get to Chris Paul later too, I think both of these guys historically are going to be looked at unfairly. Because we can assume that Chris Paul at this point is probably not going to win the championship.
Yeah.
Or at least if he does, it'll be like, you know, he'll be ring chasing on the Lakers at age 38 or whatever.
Well, you assume that Adam Silver's not going to block that trade.
Yeah, okay, fine. Ring chasing on the Bucks. That's how they keep Giannis. I think they're going to be more maligned than what they deserve just because of their lack of success in the playoffs. Whereas like Harden, I think is a no brainer. He retires today. He's a Hall of Famer.
Right, right, right.
His statistics will always be better than Kawhi's. So in that sense, yes. But I think that just comes down to, it's much harder to quantify defense.
Yeah.
So it's harder to encapsulate what Kawhi brings to the table. And I mean, to some extent, you could say that about LeBron and Giannis too. Like, yeah, okay, they rebound a lot. They, you know, steals and blocks are there, but their versatility, I think there's no way to really capture that, at least in, you know, readily publicly available data. Like, you've got the who matches up against number one options and all that stuff that if you dig deep enough, you can find it, but it's not like, it's not going to be the box score. Whereas like James Harden, three straight years of leading the league in points per game, that stands out. Or like James Harden knocking down five threes a game, that stands out much more than like Giannis Antetokounmpo can guard one through five and, you know, spends X number of time of his possessions on the number one option
right
on any given night.
But it's interesting, though, because we see how stats can warp our perception of players. And I think this is really, like, this is where the debate becomes interesting. Like, where should we put our focus? Should we put our focus on stats? Should we put our focus on solely advanced metrics? Should we put our emphasis on the eye test or accomplishments? I mean, obviously, what you would want is a combination of everything. And I think that's definitely the safest way to get the full picture. But like you just said, like 40 years down the line, nobody's going to go back and watch like two full careers of Kawhi Leonard and James Harden. So their reference point is going to be statistics on presumably Basketball Reference, which at that point will have evolved even more. And I'm just sitting here and thinking, oh boy, like, people are going to be under the perception that James Harden was a significantly better basketball player than Kawhi Leonard based on the fact that, you know, Harden had years where he averaged 36 and 34 points a game, and Kawhi was like 25, 26. That's going to be the basis of it, and I think that's a shame.
I mean, I wonder if the one thing working Kawhi's favor is he's going to have the finals MVP and the rings.
Yeah, the rings.
And that's going to...
The rings.
Right. Well, I mean, that could be what, you know, when you're looking back, you're right. Like, people aren't, in 30 years, aren't going to look back and rewatch Kawhi Leonard's whole career or James Harden's whole career. But if you're just, like, looking back through accolades or whatever, like, I wonder if that is where I go, oh, okay, this guy statistically wasn't as strong, but what happened here? Like, why did he win these rings, and why did this other guy not? Why was he named Finals MVP? Like, what made him stand out? Was he really the best player on his championship team? You know, and you look back to the Spurs teams, especially on a team with Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili. He's the guy who won that MVP award?
Yeah. I mean, God, that's going to be a weird thing. I'm going to be just standing for Kawhi when I'm 60 or 70.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to. But it's a good point because, you know, this is now up to our generation. When, you see, I always make fun of you when you pitch these ideas to me. Hey, let's do a ranking pod where I'm just like, dude, come on. But it's actually pretty interesting because it helps, like, sort of settle the debate just a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. So, number five for me, please don't hate me, but I had Anthony Davis over Luka Doncic.
No, I mean, I get that. I get that. Okay. I don't agree with it necessarily, but I get it. I think it's a fair argument. And again, like, defense matters.
Yeah.
I would, I guess if I had to jumble everyone around a little bit, I would probably go Luka instead of Harden, and then Davis, and then Harden, but look, those three, they can be jumbled together and it'll be fine, so I really don't have a huge problem with anything in that vein.
Yeah.
And besides, Luka's going to jump like three spots next year.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, it exactly, you said, it's the defense of Anthony Davis, and you could, you know, you could ask, like, why did James Harden go above him? If Luka didn't, you know, Luka's not averaging as many points, but he's averaging, I want to say, both more rebounds and more assists than Harden this year.
Yeah,
by significant margins. And it's fair. I mean, Luka's efficiency is a little bit less than Harden's, especially from deep. So, as you said, like, this is This is by no means Luka Doncic, who just turned 21 in February. This is by no means the finished product of Luka, and we're going to see him, I'm sure, as soon as next season, start knocking down probably closer to 4 threes a game instead of 3. And when that happens, he's going to move up pretty considerably, regardless if he makes major strides on defense or not. You said it well. All three of these guys could be jumbled up pretty easily. It's like, I know those three guys belong together in this 4-5-6 order. I don't really care which order you have them in. This is just, you know, that's how I tried to separate them.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think next year it's going to be like Giannis, and then you can argue whether it's going to be LeBron or Kawhi at number two, to be perfectly honest with you. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Kawhi. And then I think Luka kind of settles in as a like predominant four slot. The projection of this kid is just out there. Like, he's going to be so good.
Yeah. So for me, after Luka, there's probably a group of, I'd say, like 4 to 5 guys where, again, it's the same deal with Harden, Davis, and Luka, where like I believe these guys are all on a tier of their own, and it's just a matter of figuring out the order of them. Number 7 for me, mostly because I want to troll our friend TJ McBride and the rest of Nuggets Twitter. Instead of putting Nikola Jokic here, which I know all of them would like, I'm putting Joel Embiid here. And I think it comes down to if Joel Embiid is fully engaged and in the conditioning that Brett Brown says he is, which, you know, he says like he came to Orlando in great shape, because of the defense, Embiid can be a more impactful player than Nikola Jokic. That is not to take away anything that Nikola Jokic does. Clearly so much better of a passer than Joel Embiid, and it blows him out of the water. I'm not saying Jokic is like a complete zero on defense.
Oh my God, would you stop apologizing?
I'm just saying, Embiid, when engaged, when healthy, when fully in shape, which...
Yes, he's better.
More,
significantly actually.
Yeah. He could just make more of an impact on both ends of the floor.
Right. I don't think that's wrong. Look, here's the thing. We have been looking at Embiid and Jokic like sort of a Magic and Bird scenario for a while now. Like, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. Those two have been tied together because of player comps for years and will continue to do so, at least for the foreseeable future. But let's not get this twisted here. Joel Embiid is hands down the more influential basketball player all around. But the key here, as you said, is when he's engaged. You're so right, because that is a key sentence. When engaged, like last year, I think he was definitely more locked in than he was this year.
Yeah. And
the guy averaged almost 28 points a game, over 13.5 rebounds, and was a strong candidate for Defensive Player of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's not get this twisted. Like, those two are comparable in certain areas, and in some other areas, which are very noteworthy, such as defense, Embiid blows it out of the water. It's okay. Now, if Embiid isn't, like, if he isn't determined to discover that that day-to-day consistency, and Jokic is, then we're going to have a debate on our hands. Because then it becomes a question of, well, Embiid is the more talented player overall, but he's not living up to those expectations, whereas Jokic is coming out every single night and doing the work. Now, if that happens, we can pick up that conversation. But so far, when you look at it, I think it's completely fair to say that Joel Embiid, given his skill set, given what he can do, is better. Yes.
Yeah. And, I mean, well, these playoffs may be a good litmus test for both of these guys, because we saw Jokic in last year's playoffs, I mean, you know, averaged 25 points, 13 rebounds, 8.5 assists per game, shot above 50% overall, almost 40 from three, almost 85 from the line. Like, that version of Jokic, it gets a lot closer, especially because we haven't seen fully healthy Embiid in the playoffs. But if, you know, Brett Brown's talking about playing Embiid 38 minutes a game in the playoffs, he averaged 30 last year. He was besieged by both knee tendonitis and a stomach flu, to put it lightly. So, you know, we just didn't really see full strength Joe in the playoffs. And knock on wood, hopefully we will this year, because I was reading Zach Lowe's column with his awards picks, and he's like, I think he said something along the lines of, if Joel Embiid doesn't win multiple Defensive Player of the Year awards, it's going to be a disappointment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that is his upside.
Correct. And you know, let's just talk about the elephant in the room here. It's Joel Embiid's lack of shooting efficiency as well. Mm-hmm. When you have someone like him who is, and we look, I don't even need to rehash this. I've been saying this at least 50 times on this podcast. If you're shooting like 46-47%, if you're Joel Embiid, that's a problem. You're so dominant. That four should be changed to a five. You should be hitting in the mid-50s in field goal percentage, and I realize that true shooting percentage is the more reliable metric, yada, yada, yada. You catch my drift still.
He
should be dominating. Like, his two-point field goal percentage is in, like, the mid to low 50s. That should probably be in the high 50s or low 60s, mm-hmm. if not better. That's one of the key areas here. It's that Embiid is leaving something on the table offensively, and that drags him down a little bit. Like, if he didn't, this discussion would look entirely different.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Embiid and Russell Westbrook have similar problems where it's like, if you cut out their five worst shots per game, their five like most misguided shots per game, they would just be such better players. But then, you know, and it comes back with Embiid, I think, to the Sixers spacing one and also conditioning. Like, there are times where he's just clearly dragging ass up the floor and, you know, catches a shot at or catches a pass at the perimeter, and like, he could swing the ball around and then try to work inside, but he's like, clearly just needs a breather, so he pulls up and takes a three that badly bricks, and then, you know, leads to a run out opportunity on the other end and ends up being a 4-point swing or 5-point swing.
Right.
So again, I guess we'll see what shape he's in Orlando, and maybe this doesn't come off as hot takey in a couple weeks, but yeah, I mean I have Embiid 7, Jokic 8, so it's not, I'm not saying Jokic is, like, not in my top 20 here. He very, very much is. It's just I have Embiid one spot higher.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. And I understand that Nuggets fans want Jokic to rank higher, and I get that. But when you have the defensive influence that Embiid has, and when he's also, Embiid, let's just be honest, he's also the better scorer, like raw scorer. He's also the better rebounder. So, like, there's just so many avenues. What Jokic does well is just he's the, like, dimensions better as a passer, and he's just more clever. Like, he plays smarter basketball, and that carries some weight. But in terms of talent and influence and production, Embiid should be higher.
Yeah. So number nine for me, doubt there's going to be much argument here, Damian Lillard.
So question to you, because I agree, I think it's Dame time there.
Yeah.
If he was more successful as, or sorry, not if he, see, there I go. If the team was more successful, how much higher would he rank?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's honestly hard to say. Because, I mean, I don't think it goes above Harden, Davis, or Doncic.
Right.
Unless they were, you know, a 60-win team. Just because he's, I mean, he's one of the most dynamic scorers in the league and has some of the most limitless shooting range in the league, and that bends the way that defenses have to guard him and opens up opportunities for his teammates. If, you know, you have to, like, oh, this guy can actually hit out to 28 feet. I can't sag off of him, like, inside the three-point line. I have to go out 25, 26 feet. Well, oh, okay, that opens up, you know, much more spacing for his other teammates for cutting lanes, whatever. So, and that's hard to quantify, if not impossible to quantify. I still, the defense with Embiid, I mean, honestly, like, you probably seven. I think you probably could put, you probably would put him above Embiid and Jokic if they were substantially better this year. Just, I mean, because Dame, I mean, this is a career year for him, which is saying a lot because he's been fantastic for a long time. But, like, the guy's averaging almost 29 points, 8 or 7.8 assists, shooting 39.4% from three on almost 10 attempts per game.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, without, like, Lowe had him fourth on his MVP ballot, which is completely fair to me. Like, he, you know, he's saying, like, without Damian Lillard, this Blazers team probably wins 15 games this year, like, given all the injuries they had, of course.
Right, right, right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's these three guys, I think it's hard to – it's similar to Davis, Harden, and Doncic. Like, you could really put Dame, Jokic, and Embiid in any order, and I wouldn't argue too hard about it.
I think it's – Dame is one of those interesting players because – the narrative about him would just change if he was on, like, a perennial 55-win team.
Mm-hmm.
We would be looking at him through a completely different lens. Like, whenever we bring up Dame now, one of the first thoughts that hits me is always, oh, if he just played for a better team. or well, rather, ill if Portland was better.
Right.
Like, I'm almost saddened on his part that he hasn't gotten to where he needs to be. And last year, I thought, was the first step in that. And then this year happened, and that was unfortunate.
Right.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think, to be fair, you know, you look ahead to next year, and it's possible that Portland goes right back into that 50-plus win mix, and maybe it's a different conversation again. Yeah. But also, you know, if that's the case, if Nurkic stays healthy, if Collins stays healthy, if Rodney Hood comes back, they probably don't need Dame to be doing the heavy lift that he did this year. Like, is he going to average 29.8 assists, 4 threes a game next year? Or is he going to go back down a little bit to, you know, what he was doing the three previous years, which was not a significant downgrade by any means. But, like, are we seeing the best of Dame because he had to lift the team on his shoulders more than he will in future years?
Right. I'm going to say something. I don't know if it's controversial or not.
Okay.
I don't know if Dame is being used, like, to the fullest extent of what he can be used as. Because when you see these guys around the league, like Giannis and Harden and LeBron and Luka, who gets the ball in their hands and are putting up, like, these insane numbers, like, Dame is having the ball in his hands even more than most of those guys. And the numbers aren't really up to par necessarily, both in, like, the assist and scoring wise. Like, when I look at Dame and I look at his raw talent, there should be nothing holding him back from averaging, like, in the low 30s or even mid 30s like Harden, right? And it seems like it's because he always has to do everything, as you alluded to, whereas it could be a pretty good asset for Portland to actually have him run around a little bit off the ball, or more than he is now, at least. And free him up as the scorer that he so clearly is, instead of basically asking him to do everything. Like, when you ask Harden to do everything, what you're essentially asking him to is just pass and score, pass and score. Same goes with Luka. Luka just rebounds as well. But Dame is a different, like, kind of cat, because he's a point guard. He identifies as a point guard. And there's those old ideologies seem to still be there in Portland a little bit. Like, oh, the point guard has to be the main ball handler. He has to be the guy who carries the passing load. He has to be the guy who, like, sets everything. Like, would you blame Dame whatsoever next year if he came out and shot the ball 25 times a game?
No. Maybe he should just move to the four.
Now, see, that was a deep cut. I like that one.
It's fair.
I think he could be used better. I think there is a scenario wherein he could be used. I don't know what that scenario is, but I think he could be used in a way where you optimize him and he may more or less puts up the same numbers that he did this year, but maybe in 4 minutes less per game.
But do you think, is that a byproduct of Portland's personnel or lack thereof? Like, do they have that secondary creator? Can CJ McCollum be that guy?
I think so. I think you need to try it out at least. Maybe here's the thing. I hear good things about Terry Stotts.
Right.
And I know that his relationship with Dame is very, very special. So I'm not advocating, hey, maybe the Blazers should look around for a new coach, because I don't think that's going to be – I don't think that's going to be received well by Dame or CJ, to be honest with you. But
yeah, well, Jason Kidd's available.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, he's about to lock up with the Knicks, which is going to be fantastic. Like, wow. But I think it could be interesting to maybe, you know, hire a some sort of assistant coach who functions as an offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Someone just with the you hire a guy with the sole principle of basically saying, hey, so what Dame is doing right now is great, but we're playing him 37 minutes a game. Figure out a way to design the offense around Dame so he gives us the exact same production that he is right now, but in 4 to 5 minutes less per game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's impossible.
Yeah, I mean, I went to look. He's currently, in terms of usage rate, he has the 14th highest in the league. He's right behind Donovan Mitchell. And you do get somewhat similar vibe. Like, Dame is obviously a much better player than Donovan Mitchell. Yep. But, yeah, like, is he... Could you... I see what you're saying. Like, could you use him better? Could you let him operate off the ball more, given how goddamn lethal he is as a shooter, especially? Like, if he's getting more catch-and-shoot opportunities, if he doesn't have to create for himself nearly as much, you know, that would, like, you would have to assume that's going to be significantly better. Like, yeah, I'm looking at his percentage of shots assisted. Oh my God. Two pointers, 8.9% of his shots are assisted.
Right.
Threes, about 28%. So if you, if you had someone capable of being that secondary playmaker, letting him operate off the ball more, you could probably see a better version of him. With that said, the version of him that we saw this year, you know, we were talking a couple episodes ago, our All-NBA team, you had him first team All-NBA as a sentimental pick, but like it felt crappy to leave him off. He had that good of a season. All right, so we had Lillard at 9. At 10 for me was Paul George. And this is more, this isn't necessarily based on what he did this year, since his stats, as we talked about in the All-NBA episode, All-NBA team episode, his stats weren't what they were last year.
Right.
But he played so much, far fewer minutes than he did last year, only 29 minutes per game. It's more the upside of, like, you know, if you're talking about who could be the best number two on a championship team, it's like him or Anthony Davis. I think you're going one and two in some order.
I mean, you just made Lakers fans sad, given all the rumors that were around the organization that Paul would come there.
I know. Or Kawhi. I mean, they thought for a minute there it looked like it was going to be LeBron, Kawhi, and Anthony Davis, in which case who... The NBA might as well have canceled the season.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. And look, some Lakers fans were like, oh, we can get Paul George too. So,
yeah.
Because,
yeah.
Cap doesn't exist.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But no, I think, look, the guy was, what, third place in MVP voting last year? Like, we saw last year what he can do as the number one option. Just because he's taking a backseat to Kawhi Leonard on a super deep team doesn't mean, you know, the upside isn't there for him to be one of the most dynamic two-way players in the NBA. So I'm not going to read too much into an expected statistical decline from him this year. Like, when the games matter most, I think we'll see the elite version of Paul George that we know exists.
Yeah. I agree with all that, but I disagree with the ranking just a little bit.
Okay.
Because I have Jimmy here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. See, I have Jimmy at 11.
Yeah.
So it's...
So, yeah. I'm going to go back a few years. There was great debate in 2016, about whether or not Jimmy Butler, when he played for the Bulls... Or no, sorry. That was 2016, 2017, I think. Was a top 10 player. And I would... Mm-hmm. To my dying breath, I will say yes. Because the way that he just did everything and... brought the Bulls to the playoffs without having virtually any spacing. Remember, that was the Dwayne Wade, Rashawn Rondo year.
Three alphas year.
Yeah, exactly. There was no spacing, yet somehow he just powered through and, like, dragged them to the playoffs by his teeth. It was amazing. Now, mm-hmm. that's the Jimmy Butler that I think is playing for the Heat this year. And I think a fully optimized Butler, which we've seen again this year, is most certainly a top 10 player. Now, granted, is he like right on the bubble? Yeah, but that's because, hey, Luka Doncic entered the league. Like,
right.
I mean, that's just Nikola Jokic happened. Giannis Antetokounmpo became the greatest player in the NBA. Like, everything kind of happened at once. So that pushed him down, but I think he was clearly a top 10 player. And I think for now, like, yeah, a top 10 position for Jimmy is fair. It's not just defense. It's the passing. So Jimmy kind of fancies himself a point guard. I don't think he's wrong. I don't think Jimmy Butler is wrong in looking at himself as a pseudo point guard, as a 6'7", 235, 240 point guard. Like, he can pass, he can rebound, he can initiate the offense. We damn well know that he can get to the free throw line as well, so he can force the issue. But the thing that impresses me the most is, now he gets you 20 points a game. He does it on 13 shots, Bri. Like, there isn't like a whole lot there where you were like, oh, he's forcing the issue. No, he's playing the game, he's reading the defense, and he's making the right reads almost constantly. Now, I would go as far as saying there is a world wherein there is a perfectly legitimate debate about whether or not, as individual basketball players, whether Jimmy Butler or James Harden, like, which one of those influences a team more. Now, most would laugh at that notion because, heh, LOL, 34 points per game compared to 20. But Jimmy, given everything that he does, I think it's a valid discussion to have, at least, because he's so multifaceted. I don't know if it's the, like, the aura around Jimmy, the whole, I'm going to let the entire world know that I'm the hardest worker of all time. I don't know what it is. I just know that this cat is a lot better than what everyone seems to be making it out as. Everyone seems to like forego him a little bit. And you brought this up as well earlier. You said Jimmy Butler is also in that conversation of a guy who won't have great stats when his career is over, but he's absolutely going to be one of the most influential players we've seen in this, like, in his era. So I think it's time that we give him some due.
Yeah, for me, I mean, there is no question he is a better passer, better playmaker than Paul George, although I don't want to give Paul George short shrift in that conversation because he's also not an elite passer or playmaker, but that is in his bag. But no question Jimmy has the advantage there. I think what's stood out to me with Paul George in recent years in particular, I mean, he's been a good three-point shooter for a while, but the volume that he's been taking, like, he is the guy who you yearn for, like, all NBA players to be. Like, you know, you often say you want these guys who are shooting high 30s, low 40s, like, double your volume in terms of three-pointers. Yeah. Paul George heard you. Like, he's, you know, over the past couple seasons, he's averaging, like, 8 or 9 threes per game, shooting them, the past 3 years, 8.6 threes a game at a 39.4% clip.
Ridiculously good.
So, right, like, just, I mean, you wouldn't think of him when you're thinking about, like, who are the best shooters in the NBA. You would think of, you know, Stephen Curry and, like, Klay Thompson and Damian Lillard. And even, you know, you start to move guys like Trae Young into the conversation just because of his range. Or, like,
Davis guys Bertans who can pull up from three, you mean.
Right, right. Paul George is there.
Yeah.
Like, Paul George is in that conversation. He should be in that conversation. So, and, you know, whereas Jimmy Butler has never been a great three-point shooter, and this year he's just like, nope, not doing it, not taking them. He's averaging only 2.2 a game, shooting them at only 24.8%.
Yeah.
It hasn't affected Miami because they have so many other shooters around him, which is great, and that's a, you know, the smart way to build around Jimmy Butler. You, for years, when he was on the Bulls, you yearn for the Bulls to tap into Point Jimmy and surround him by shooters. Yeah. Miami listened, and, like, this is the right way to build around him. But I think Paul George, because I would take his shooting ability over Jimmy Butler's passing at this point.
That's fair. That's very reasonable. I would definitely take Jimmy's passing over George's shooting, but I think it's a very, very valid argument. Like, because it comes down to what does that open up for others? Because one thing is, Jimmy Butler being a fantastic passer, yes, that opens up things for others. But the fact that Paul George can hit that many threes and be as efficient with it, that opens up driving lanes for others as well. So that's an indirect assist in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's fair.
Yeah. So now we move, again, those five guys really, Embiid, Jokic, Lillard, George, Butler. I think Embiid, Jokic, Lillard are above George and Butler. But I think, you know, those five guys are on a tier above anyone else I'm about to name here.
Yeah, now you're going to piss me off.
Well, this is where it just gets so hard. Like, there is not much separating a lot of these guys. But number 12 on my list, and yes, I know it will piss you off, is Chris Paul.
You have Chris Paul over Pascal Siakam, dude.
Yeah.
I'm not with that. You have him over Ben Simmons. I'm not with that. You have him over Jason Tatum and Chris Middleton. I'm not necessarily with that. I like what Paul is doing. I just... Look, I'm not going to sit here and say that he didn't have, like, a resurgence in OKC. Clearly he did. Now, do I think that we as an NBA community has begun overstating his impact for this year? Yeah. I kind of do. I think we were so willing, every one of us, to just kind of want to go back to the whole we love CP3, you know, point guard kind of mentality. Yeah, his shooting percentages went up. Outside of that, not much changed. I mean, he's always been this point guard. He's always been very, very good. And I'm not saying he isn't deserving of being on the top 20 list, at least, or an honorable mention. But mm-hmm. to have him that high up, that's a tough swallow for me because I'm not there. I'm just not there. I think he's living not entirely off of reputation. That would be way too harsh. That's not where I'm at, but partly off of reputation. And I don't think he's as good as we've painted him as.
That is a fair critique. I mean, like, he is an advanced metrics darling, right?
Right.
I mean, like, if you go by ESPN's real plus minus, he's sixth in the NBA. He is right behind Kawhi Leonard. So in that respect, like, are the advanced metrics painting his impact higher than it otherwise is? Possibly. I mean, you shouldn't just base any evaluation off of one metric. So, you know, I'm not saying like Chris Paul is on my list just because he ranks really high in terms of, you know, real plus minus. So, like, he's tied for ninth in win shares, but so he's tied with Luka, which is great, but also Hassan Whiteside.
Right.
So throw that stat out immediately if Luka Doncic and Hassan Whiteside are tied. I'll just say this about Chris Paul. And I said this, you know, we were talking about all NBA teams as well. It really does feel like he is the head of that snake, where if not for him, I don't know how many games that OKC team wins this year, despite having, you know, you've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's already turning into one of the best young point guards or best young guards,
yeah.
One of the most exciting young players in the NBA, Danilo Gallinari, who when healthy is a walking bucket. Steven Adams has long been one of the better screeners and, like, dirty work guys in the NBA. Dennis Schroeder's having a great season, Sixth Man of the Year caliber season. I don't know that any of it works without Chris Paul there.
And that's fair, because here's the thing. You can still be a highly influential player and not be a top 20 NBA talent.
Yeah. I mean, like,
again, it depends on how far the big you think the drop is.
Right. I don't have, again, with a lot of these guys, like, I wouldn't have problem with someone saying Pascal Siakam deserves to be higher than Chris Paul. I get it. Like, I'm open to that argument for sure.
Right.
I do think he would have to be in the top 20. I would have issue with him. Again, it would depend on, like, what the rest of your top 20 looked like.
Right.
But if you're putting, like, I don't know, who, yeah, we could get there, you know, toward the bottom of the list and then,
like, Robert Covington or something.
Yeah. Oh no, Robert Covington did. He's fine. you know, if you were putting, like, Kemba Walker over him,
right?
I couldn't, I wouldn't do that.
I think I can get behind a top 20 placement. I just think there's something that we seem to be forgetting in all this. Like, we're talking about, like, the analytics and stuff. So Chris Paul returned to the All-Star game this year, and that was with much hoopla, I think we can agree. Like, Chris Paul is back. He's regained his touch and all that, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just going to read you his PER. With that said, I know PER is a flawed stat, so I'm not going to use that like as the whole argument, but just bear with me here. So in the 3 years that he didn't make the All-Star team, he had a PER of 26.2, 24.4, and 19.7. And this year he returned to 21.7. Where is this resurgence that we're talking about? Like, he was, if we go off of PER, even true shooting percentage as well, he was clearly better, like, at his age 31 season where he didn't make the All-Star team, where everyone was kind of, like, in a full agreement that, yeah, he's about to decline. He's declining. Mm-hmm. He isn't there anymore. He isn't the same Chris Paul anymore. That assessment was right. He isn't. And yet we just kind of desperately flew him back onto the big stage because we wanted him to. I just don't...
I think that the team success with OKC is what put him back on the big stage. I mean, the fact that they were... You know, you trade Russ, you trade Paul George, you're expecting them to trade Chris Paul to wherever. You don't expect them to be a playoff team this year, and then for them to be as good as they were. I think Chris Paul... I don't want to say this was like a media creation. Like,
No, I'm not saying it was entirely media created. I'm saying that it was a part of it.
I mean, yes and no. I do think, I mean, maybe we were just too down on Chris Paul in past years.
Now, see, that's interesting because that might be fair. Because when you look at that one season where he had a PER of 26 and he didn't make the All-Star team, the Clippers were 50. They won 51 games.
Right. It was just like that team so clearly hated each other by the end that I think we were all just done with them.
Oh, so what you're saying there is that narrative changed the outcome?
Yeah.
So are you saying that narrative this year couldn't change the outcome?
It's definitely, like, I think it narrative did to some extent because, again, like, if the Thunder weren't as good, no one would be paying attention to what Chris Paul is doing. It's like the fact that even though his stats aren't like standout, right? I mean, cool. He's averaging 18 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds. Great. Yeah. Like, that's not prime Chris Paul when he was like a 20-10.
6. You know, two and a half steals.
Right. So he's not that anymore. He's playing fewer minutes per game than he did in his prime, but not significantly. Like, his per 36 averages are down. I just really think it is the, you know, they cobbled this team together somewhat overnight.
Yeah.
With all of the changes they made, and for them to be as good as they were, it's like, okay, you know, I think this is like Chris Paul keeping this team together. So, yeah, it's not just a, you know, look at the stats and tell me, you know, where he ranks in PER or RPM or VORP or whatever. It's like, you're right. It is part of a narrative of, you know, team success. Who do you give credit for?
Right, right. And this is where I'm saying that team still had, without Paul, 3 players averaging over 19 points a game. Which
OKC did this year?
Yeah. Which matters. And again, to reiterate before I piss off a lot of people, I am not saying that Chris Paul was not valuable. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve a top 20 position here. I'm saying you have him at 12. And I think that is very, very high.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, Pascal Siakam is 13 for me, and I could very easily be talked into Siakam going over Chris Paul.
Yeah.
Especially the leap he made offensively with Kawhi Leonard gone. We talked about it in the MIP awards pod a few episodes ago, so we don't need to go too far into it again. But yeah, I mean, what he did there, and then defensively, he took a slight step back, but still great, versatile player. Toronto had an amazing regular season. Yeah, I would have no issue swapping those two guys.
Good. Then do it.
Fine. We'll move Pascal to 12. We'll put CP3 at 13. Because I know 14 also is going to piss you off. I have Rudy Gobert, patient zero.
Well, I mean, it's not going to piss me off. I just think there's a larger debate in place. You know, he's the best defender on a good defensive team. But you and I have spoken about, you know, individual defense compared to team defense a lot. Mm-hmm. Where you have to wonder, like, are we putting too much stock into one guy's individual defense to rate him this highly?
In Gobert's case in particular, I don't think we are, because okay. they built that entire defense around him.
Yeah.
You know, like, they have designed their defense to funnel guys into the basket because they know Gobert is there and he's going to snuff out their shots more often than not.
Right.
And he, even if he's not, you know, he's not leading the league in blocks, he's averaging 2 a game, which is still great, but, you know, it's not 3 or 4 like prime Serge Ibaka back in the day.
Yeah.
But he's acting as a deterrent. I mean, like, that's what the stats won't fully encapsulate, is like, how many shots does he prevent from even taking? Because, you know, a guard is driving into the rim and sees this 7'2" guy who's got, you know, 7'8", 7'9" arms, and they're like, oh no, we're not going to challenge that.
Well,
so
okay, then explain to me why you have Ben Simmons below him when Ben, in that effect, can guard more positions and is way more switchable, while he gives you way more offensively.
Since we had the 20-minute Ben Simmons discussion last episode, I will do the TLDR version. And it's, as you said, he's leaving stuff on the table.
Okay.
Like, if this move to the 4 unlocks Ben Simmons and he starts shooting threes like he did against the Grizzlies in the scrimmage, and, you know, like, the concerns about the Sixers spacing are gone, or at least diminished compared to what they were throughout the regular season before the hiatus, Ben Simmons moves up significantly. But, you know, we don't, on any given night during the regular season, you could say the same about Embiid, frankly. Yeah. We just didn't know which version of Ben Simmons we were going to get. Are we going to get the locked-in 30-point triple-double threat? Or are we going to get the guy who's just going to kind of, like, lollygag and give you, like, 12, 7, and 6? Like, the defense is there either way. But at least Gobert, I mean, I know he had some ebbs and flows as well this year. But defensively, you know you're going to get what you're going to get out of Rudy Gobert more often than not. Ben Simmons, you're not quite there yet.
I'll buy that. I still have him below Ben Simmons. I buy the argument.
Mm-hmm.
I still believe that having a wing, especially in today's NBA game, who can do all the things that Ben Simmons can do, and I think this counts as well for Chris Middleton, to be perfectly honest with you,
mm-hmm.
I think that is more crucial of an acquisition to get than Rudy Gobert.
That's fair.
Not saying that Rudy isn't fantastic. Like, he clearly is, and you cannot just pick someone up on the waiver wire or in free agency who gives you like 80% of what he does. But right. If push came to shove and I had to pick someone, like, I would definitely choose like the multi-switchable wing, do-it-all kind of forward slash guard in Ben Simmons. And
yeah, like, if you're like building a team from scratch, you mean?
Yeah. I would live with what I could find free agency wise. Like, if I can find a Rashawn Holmes for mm-hmm. $5 million a year, I would go with that instead of like prioritizing Rudy Gobert. If it cost me a chance of getting a Ben Simmons or a Chris Middleton. No, I'm not saying that I don't get the argument here, but I just think that when we look at the NBA in the year 2020, I think there are better ways to build a roster.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that is true, right? I mean, it's the value of centers in general, or like the non-unicorn centers, has just been so marginalized.
Yeah.
That, yeah, if you're able to get a Brook Lopez or a Robin Lopez for like the room mid-level exception, then you don't need to be spending $20+ million or giving a guy like Rudy Gobert a max extension. Like, you would much rather, just given the value of wings in today's NBA, you would much rather have those guys than a limited Gobert who's not going to be shooting a ton of threes, or like is not fleet of foot enough on defense to chase a ton of pick and rolls or guard small ball lineups. I think with with Ben Simmons and Jason Tatum, who I have at number 15, a lot of it is just like Rudy Gobert is more of a finished product than Tatum and Simmons. Like we can project Tatum and Simmons,
yeah,
both of them, who I, you know, at their peak will be far better than Rudy Gobert. I don't think you could really argue otherwise, especially given the flashes that we've seen from both of those guys. It's just like, you know, the Simmons, as I said before, the inconsistency. Tatum, we talked about it in the All-NBA episode. It's like that 15-game stretch before the season shut down, that was a superstar. That is a superstar in the making. That player would be in the top 10 of this list.
Yeah.
Like, I would put the version of the February version of Jason Tatum would belong above Paul George and above Jimmy Butler.
Okay. Fair.
It's, you know, it's just a 15-game sample. It's like, let's see him do it again.
I can't figure out if you're penalizing youth a little bit here.
I might be.
Well, if you are, then having Luka at 6 is something.
Well, wouldn't that be... Oh, I mean, my
point is he's going to be insanely high rated than when he's a finished product.
Oh, well, that's without question.
That was just a joke, because obviously he will be, because he's fantastic.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you had him, you were saying you would have him 4th, so I kind of did penalize him a little bit, but no, I mean, like, again, with Tatum, it's just, we saw the flashes, and it was a more consistent, it was a surge more than flashes. Like, Simmons, it's flashes. It's one game, or two games, or three games, and then it's like, poof, you snap your fingers and he's back to like loafing against the Cleveland Cavaliers again. And
right,
maybe, you know, in this environment in Orlando, he won't have that opportunity. He'll have a couple seeding games and maybe they don't really give a damn about them, but like playoffs start in 8 games. And then you're hopefully not going to get the loafing version of Simmons, but you know, we saw Toronto last year and Boston in 2018, that lack of shooting, there are ways to game plan around Ben Simmons that makes him easier to defend. And you could say the same about Rudy Gobert. I mean, Houston rendered him somewhat irrelevant for 2 straight years in the playoffs. Tatum, I think, is the one guy who really, really could take that big jump up this board, just because it's so hard to find where that weakness is of his. And when you do find it, you know, he's clearly only getting better.
Yeah.
Like, he is by no means a finished product either. We were saying that about Luka earlier. Like, Jason Tatum, all of the concern about, did he peak as a rookie? No. No, he did not. Hard no. February and March showed it. So, if he comes out in these scrimmages and in these seeding games and in this playoffs looking like he hasn't missed a step and missed a beat from February and March, bump him way up. It's just like, I can't for sure say we're going to get superstar Tatum from, you know, from the get-go once play resumes here.
Okay. Yeah, no, that seems a little bit more reasonable.
Yeah. So 17 for me is Chris Middleton, and I feel like Bucks fans are going to be mad about this.
I think they
should.
I feel
like they're going
to
want...
I've already said what I wanted to say.
Yeah. And I get it. I think for me, it's Middleton is like the perfect number 2 next to Giannis.
Yeah.
I mean, you could argue like he would be an even better number 3, but you know, he works really well as a number 2, super efficient, just a quality player. No question, both ends of the floor, really good. I think, you know, if we're talking about projecting, when we are with guys like Tatum and Simmons and even Pascal Siakam a little bit, it feels like all of their ceilings are higher than Middleton. I don't know that Chris Middleton, you're ever going to necessarily want him as the number 1 option on a team, and hopefully the Bucks will never have to. You know, hopefully Giannis stays put and this is a non-issue, but like, Chris Middleton's already 28 years old. He is much more of a finished product as well. And like, this finished product is really good, but you know, if I'm looking ahead to who could take that big next leap, I'm going to put Tatum and Simmons above him.
Yeah. All right. I mean, I can go along with that. Gobert, I can't, but I get you.
Yeah. Okay. 18 for me will infuriate you as well. This is where I put Russell Westbrook.
Sure.
I mean, you said it. January through March, Russell Westbrook. That's the Russell Westbrook we wanted to see.
See, I'm confused. So you are basically saying, I'm not going to rate Jason Tatum that highly because what he did in a 15-game sample size was just that. We need to see more of it. And then with Russ, you're saying, hey, look, here's a 14-game sample size, so let's put him on the list.
It was more than 14 games, wasn't it?
Nope, 14 games. 8-6 they went.
That was with the small ball.
Yeah, that's when he played well.
No, he started playing well before. He stopped taking threes before that.
That's actually true. Okay, fair enough. That's actually true. Let me just go back and look. I just know that during the small ball experiment, he was averaging almost 32 points a game and looking every bit like the player he should be looking at because he was averaging, I believe, 54.5% from the field.
Yeah.
Just gonna go back. Give me a second. Let me see.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, he toned down on the threes, but he definitely hit his strides in that at like the post Robert Covington trade. Yeah.
Yeah. I think in general, like as soon as he started eschewing threes to the volume that he was taking early in the year.
Right.
That was the Russ that we've wanted to see forever. And so, like, and I'm going to assume that nothing about the last 4 months will have convinced Russell Westbrook that, like, oh, man, I was playing so much better when I was taking 8 threes a game and hitting one of them.
Right.
You know, like, all these coaches have had 4 months to just pour over game film. I guarantee you Mike D'Antoni is like, hey, Russ, you know what you shouldn't do? Just take a ton of threes.
No, I can actually get behind Russ making this list and on the top 20, depending, of course, that this becomes the steady thing. Like, if he comes back here, like, in the bubble and just starts hoisting again and it's all for nothing, they're not going to be really upset, Bri.
That's fair. I will, too, because that's not the top 20 player that he was right when the season shut down.
Yeah. I would have gone Jaylen Brown.
Okay, that's fair.
I like the defense. I still don't think Russ's defense is anything to really write home about.
Mm-hmm.
And Jaylen Brown, I think, has become criminally underrated. Really, it's been like the Jason Tatum show, which I get because Tatum is brilliant, but I feel as though Brown has been the forgotten man in Boston.
Well, yeah, especially with Kemba is the new face. Gordon Hayward, you know, had a bounce back season after, like, you know, loses the first season of the injury. Last season looks like a shell of himself.
Right.
So, yeah, and like Marcus Smart is actually hitting threes at a somewhat reasonable volume this year. So, yeah, I think you're right. Brown did kind of fly under the radar for a guy who averaged 20 points a game on the third best team in the East.
And is arguably an even better defender. And I don't even think it's arguably. I think he is the better defender than between him and Tatum. You and I have even talked about this.
Yep. Agreed. Yeah, I mean, Brown was not, full disclosure, not on my top 20 because we're already at number 18, but he was in that next group of guys. Kemba, too, honestly. You know, where, like, at this point, it's just like, we were talking about this with the All-NBA stuff, too. There are just so many really talented guys in the NBA that there aren't enough spots for guys who are having this caliber of season.
Is this where you're going to propose that the next time we do one of these things is like a top 50?
No, that will actually kill me.
Okay, good. Yes.
Number 19 for me is Kyle Lowry. We talked about him on the All-NBA episode, so I don't feel like we need to get too far into it. But again, second best team in the East. You know, he had a bounce back season compared to last year. It's similar to the Chris Paul thing, where I just don't know if stats fully encapsulate what he brings on a night-to-night basis. And then 20 for me was Donovan Mitchell. I mean, I know that the Jazz were kind of like low-key Sixers West, where you had higher hopes for them, and it just didn't pan out for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But I also can't hold that against Donovan Mitchell, who shot a career-high 45.3% overall this year. you know, averaged 24 points a game, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. Like, guy's just a really good player on a good team, and it's hard to ignore it.
Yeah. I'm getting a little bit fed up with the narrative that he doesn't improve. Like, I understand that you're looking for, like, a big leap from him, but I also have this feeling that when you come in as a rookie and average over 20 points a game, you know, taking that second leap is extraordinarily difficult. And if you look at him from a rookie perspective and now, like, he's raised his point total by almost 4 points a game. Right. And he's just a smarter player, like, free throw wise as well, just, like, more concentrated, like, just doing more defensively, on the ball, off the ball. Like, yeah, I think we should, like, be careful about these narratives that guys don't improve, or, like, it's...
Well, his percentages have gone up.
Yeah.
So, you know, he shot 43.7 overall as a rookie. Now he's at 45.3, 34% from three as a rookie. Now he's at 36.4, 80.5% from the free throw line as a rookie. Now he's at 85.9. So he's just a more efficient player from every area of the floor, which, yeah, I mean, I think you said it well. It's like, if you come in averaging 20.5 points per game, there isn't a ton of room to grow unless your name is Luka Doncic.
you stole my line. I was just about to say that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Luka's going to be one of those guys who you basically always say, except for Luka Doncic, right? He's going to be like the exception to every rule.
I'm just so happy we were recording podcasts ahead of the 2018 draft. So there is a historical record of us saying, you know, we had him number one on our boards, and we did not understand the hate for him.
Yeah,
pre-draft hate.
Yeah, nope, that was all very weird. I still don't remember the name of the dude who said he should be a second rounder, but my God,
was it
Rashad Phillips or something?
Yeah, Phillips. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I remember after I saw it, I blocked that account because, like, there's no way I could take that serious anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, that's my top 20. I apologize to Brandon Ingram, CJ McCollum, Domantas Sabonis, Bam Adebayo, all of whom were tough omissions. It's just,
I have one guy you didn't bring up here as your honorable mention or apology to, which I have a problem with.
Okay, who?
Well, let me preface this first. Because in the last episodes when we did power rankings, I yelled at you for numerous times for saying what you presented was all theoretical.
Uh-huh.
I'm also going to present something right now that is entirely theoretical, so you feel free to yell at me.
Okay.
Ja Morant.
Yeah. Yeah, he's in my omissions as well.
Yeah.
But again, it's like, talk to me in a year or 2 years, he's definitely in this
list. No, because... Here's the thing. When I asked you before we start recording, what is this top 20 list like built upon? Is it stats? Yeah. Is it influence? Is it like most valuable member of a team? You know, whatever. And you said, well, it's more or less like the MVP criteria, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like most valuable to a team.
Mm-hmm.
Take Ja Morant away from the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yeah.
Where are they? And that's a legitimate question.
I mean, I think we know where they are.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, what were they projected to be coming into the year? Like 26, 27 win team?
I have no idea. But I am wondering out loud. And again, I'm not trying to hate on him because I love him. But if you take Kyle Lowry away from the Raptors, maybe they don't make the playoffs. But maybe they do. I mean, we just saw them make the playoffs in very dominant fashion without Kawhi Leonard, who led them to the title last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they have Fred VanVleet already. Are we saying that if you took Kyle Lowry away from the Raptors right now, that they wouldn't make the playoffs?
I mean, no, because the bottom two seeds in the East suck.
All right,
but
that's actually very, very fair. But you catch my drift, though.
Yeah.
Whereas Morant, like, it's pretty clear as day that if you take him away, they're going to suck. Mm-hmm. And they're right there in the playoff picture.
Yeah.
I may be overthinking it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, it just comes down to I can't as like John Morant had a phenomenal rookie season. We had unanimous rookie of the year, no question there.
Right.
I can't put him above any of these guys on this list just because, you know, they're all of them are more established. And it's not that John Morant, it's not like I believe John Morant's a mirage that he's not going to continue to get better. It's just I can't put him over any of these guys yet. It will happen soon, though.
I'm just waiting for all the aggregators to listen to this and go, Brian Toporek said that
John Morant is not going to turn into
anything. Yeah.
Yeah, right. I did not just write an article in Forbes about why the Grizzlies should be a dark horse, like Giannis contender next year. Which they should be, by the way.
See, full disclosure, I actually haven't read that. I think I retweeted it, but I haven't read it yet. I need to go read that.
Yeah.
Did you put that in the group?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, my apologies.
It's all good. Yeah, I mean, just... The TLDR version is they have a ton of cap space. They have Ja, Jaren, Brandon Clark on rookie contracts.
Right.
Dylan Brooks on a reasonable deal. Justice Winslow on a reasonable deal. Like, if you're looking for young, you know, project out in the future, like, who, you know, we're going to do this at some point, probably in the offseason. Like, who has the, you know, which team's future would you pick if you had to start right now? Like, who would you pick moving forward? The Grizzlies. It might just be like they have the mystery box element where, and, you know, they, like the best case scenario is so high that they win a championship. But like it's very easy to project them out and be like, man, they have an enormously bright future if they could just land, like, not sign Chandler Parsons 2.0.
Oh, you had to go there. No, I think that's interesting. Maybe that's a topic for another podcast. Like,
for sure.
Just looking at the young teams, like, if gun to your head, where do you start? And then go down the list.
Yeah. Oh, we will definitely do that at some point. But luckily, Mort, the next time we record, we're going to have actual basketball to discuss and analyze, which is something I would not have dreamed of saying a few months ago. But I am so happy that we could say it now.
Yeah. So as I said a couple episodes ago, I've decided just to pivot into being very, very positive about this because I don't think anything good is going to come from sitting here just doubting the whole bubble setup. No, I think we've been very vocal where we stand on the bubble and the execution of it and all of that. Let's just enjoy basketball and hope for the best.
Yeah, and I mean, right, exactly. Like, it's happening, like it or not, so at this point... You just got to root for everyone to stay healthy, both in terms of COVID and injuries. I mean, I don't want to see anyone suffer anything that's going to affect them in the future, hopefully. I mean, it's basketball, so we probably won't get that lucky. But, you know, fingers crossed we just get some good, clean fun these next few months. Because it's been, God, it's just been nice to have basketball back on TV, like, while I'm working. And I'm excited for these seeding games to start because we get like basically basketball all day every day, which is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's especially amazing when there's a game on and I have to podcast, so I can't watch it. Yeah.
That's why you got to get a TV next to your setup, man. Got to move your computer out to the living room.
I am so glad that my wife isn't listening to this podcast. She would write you a very angry email saying, don't fill his head with those ideas. Because you know what? I totally would if I could. But you remember where my office is. It's in the kitchen, right?
Yeah. Don't tell Vic I said that.
Yeah, I think so.
Good. Well, that is a good place to wrap up. Hope everyone is staying safe out there. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews, and we are being hosted by Spreaker. So check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek. And Mort, do you have a movie review for us before we go?
I have, yes. So I promised myself that I wouldn't watch it because I just did not want to support another Will Ferrell comedy.
Oh, the new Netflix one?
Yeah, the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yeah.
Rachel McAdams steals the show. I actually gave it 6 out of 10. And usually, Will Ferrell movies, I'm down in like giving those movies like 3 or 4 out of 10. So this is like double up. It's actually pretty entertaining. It's dumb, but it's full of heart.
Yeah, we watched it as well on a total whim, and I was very pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I got to give it credit. Definitely better than The Breakfast Club, for sure.
Oh my God.
I've had numerous debates about this, and you know what I found?
That you're wrong?
Kindred spirits, my friend.
Wow.
I think you know what I think it is? I think it is a cultural barrier about like Americans and non-Americans.
Oh, interesting.
I think it's something about, because Americans that I speak to are like, what are you talking about? It's one of the best movies ever. And internationals that speak to are like, yeah, I watched that too. I didn't get like the appeal. I don't think it's good.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I could see that. Is the same true with Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Oh, that's a good question. I never brought that up in those conversations. Maybe I should have.
Yeah. I'd be curious.
Yeah. But it's funny though, because there's also that, oh God, I'm completely whiffing on the name of the movie. It stars John Goodman and like it's the whole bowling alley
movie. Oh, The Big Lebowski.
The Big Lebowski, yeah.
Yeah.
Like that is very popular in the States as well, but over here it's I'm the same way. I watched it and I was completely expecting to be blown away, and I left it feeling that was okay-ish, like at best. And that's the same thing over here.
You just have to do a ton of drugs, and it's the best movie I've ever seen.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. I'm going to break my 34-year-old sobriety. Okay.
Yeah.
Actually, right, I do have one other movie review, and it's on Netflix, at least here in Denmark, so I hope it's also on there. I don't know if I mentioned it before. So the guy who plays the Green Arrow, Stephen Amell, uh-huh. He's made a movie called Code 8. He made it with his cousin, Robbie Amell, last year. And it's a sci-fi, like, action thing. And they worked on a pretty minuscule budget. But what they ended up with, considering it was not a great budget, was really, really surprisingly good. So, yeah, watch Code 8.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Duly noted.
All right.
All right. Gonna tell me not to die?
I mean, you put Chris Paul at 12. Always. Don't die, man.
Thank you. You too.